Ready, and a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from Long Box podcast. This is episode 136. I'm actually ready this time. Spotlight on Marvel Comics, New Mutants, Volume 1, Number 1. I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
He doesn't sound like he's sure.
That's because he left half of himself on the road.
Oh, okay.
The right half.
Yeah.
And I am Murray Fox. And I'm on holidays. Whoop, whoop. Although, when this gets posted, I will not be on holidays. I will be back at work. Oh. So this whoop, whoop is like a fake whoop, whoop. Although it's real right now, it won't be. It won't be shortly. It won't be when you're listening to it.
Okay. Now that we got that all figured out.
Wibbly wobbly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. When you hear this, I'll be all sad because I had to come home from Planet Comic Con, so. But hopefully I'll have some good stories to tell.
Ooh, I went to the teeny tiny Toronto Comic Con this weekend.
Yeah, I heard that. Was
and you're hearing it?
No,
last weekend.
Yeah. Was it good?
It was fine. It was fine. There were some dollar bins. Oh, and okay. Scott and I were going to go see the Francis Manipul, what do they call it, sketch duel?
Yeah.
Where two great artists duel each other while they're sketching, but he blew it off.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Who was he going to sketch against?
Kalman Androsofsky.
Huh. So he just said, hey, you know, whatever.
Well, according to Kalman, who is a good friend with Francis, he said now that Francis is on Detective Comics, he's like a rock star. And
okay.
You'll never see him again.
He doesn't show up for teeny tiny cons.
No. Well, he was at the con. He just wasn't at what he said he was going to be at. But
yeah. Apparently there's, speaking of that, it's like that kind of thing. I guess Rick Remender was supposed to be at... I think it was Rick Remender at the Kansas City Con I'm going to, and I guess every year he cancels at the last minute, so he just got through canceling. Somebody was posted on Facebook. How many times is this going to happen before you stop inviting him?
Is that like Matt Damon on Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah, I think that's
it. Run out of time. I'm sorry. We're going to have to bump Matt Damon.
Yeah, that's right.
That's my favorite ongoing things on Jimmy Kimmel, so. Not that I'm ever up late enough to watch Jimmy Kimmel.
Whoa! Murray dropped.
Yeah. Teeny tiny Murray.
Murray, where are you?
So, while we were waiting for Murray to come back in, I'll see if I can give a little background here. So, we had to do a filler. So I thought, well, the fun fillers always tend to be when we read through an issue of a comic book. And I thought, well, we can't just go grab one that we've all read like a gazillion times. So I randomized and I said, okay, pick a number between 1 and 3. 1 being DC, 2 being Marvel, 3 being other. And it came up a 2. And then I said, okay, now randomize the numbers 1 through 26. Obviously, that's A through Z. And it came up 14, which is N. And so here we are with an N comic from Marvel Comics. And so I looked through the list, and a lot of like knew this, knew that. With after New Avengers came out, and there was some other the Nom. I didn't think the Nom would be fun to read. So, and I know that Chris, you have recently revived your interest in X-Men stuff.
That's true.
And Murray, if he ever gets back online here, I know that he also regained some interest in the X-Men during the Battle of the Atom, which was mid last year, late last year,
something like that.
They all start to blend together. So
yeah,
this would be fun. I thought it'd be fun to read about the New Mutants from 1980 frickin' 3. And there's Murray.
I know. Call failed.
Is that Murray? Oh. Call failed.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him back in.
All right. Well,
he says he's lost in cyberspace.
I have no idea what that means. I was lost in cyberspace. Yeah, well. So this was during the heyday when Chris Claremont was doing everything mutant at Marvel. This, that, and the other thing. I think we had... Have we seen Wolverine yet? I don't remember what year Wolverine was out, but...
I'm pretty sure he was out by then.
By this point. So we had the Wolverine miniseries, which was opening the door to a gazillion more mutant things. But yeah, we only had one X-Men book at this point. I mean, it was like a single team of X-Men, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
There wasn't X-Force. There wasn't... X-Factor, there wasn't Wolverine and the X-Men, etc. Uh-huh. As I continue to vamp here, sorry.
Yeah.
So this was unique. This was an opportunity for Marvel to boot up the mutants. And we may not get a Murray for this call.
Yeah, weird. Oh, he's signing back in again.
Oh, that's Skype.
Yeah, well, all of a sudden it causing issues there.
His mutant power. He's Skype Fallout Boy. He's not a Legionnaire. Yeah. He's X-Men.
All right. Well, let's see. All right. We're waiting on him a little bit. He's going to log out and log back on. Whoa. Oh. Did I just lose you? Okay. That was funky.
What happened?
I don't know. It was weird picture flaking around. I think it was an ad that popped up or something. So, do we want to wait for him, or do we want to?
Yeah, we could. I know that everyone.
Vamp a minute.
Because I spent time in traffic today, which caused this whole thing to start late. So I apologize. So if I understand that we're on a timeline anyhow.
I'm like, yeah, Murray's gonna pick up some kids.
Kids.
Teenagers, in fact.
Teenagers. Whatever.
Yep.
Whatever. Well, I'm currently trying to catch up on Walking Dead, if that matters.
Yeah. Oh, what, the comic or the other?
No, the TV show.
Yeah, I just watched the latest one today.
I'm back.
He's back.
He's back. I'm in the midst of watching the Daryl episode. So.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, so. I gave a little history, Murray, on where the New Mutants came from. So at this point in the X-Men titles, the X-Men were actually off in space, but everyone thought they were dead. So Xavier was moping around. He was all emoed out, going, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he decided to open the school up as a school again and bring in these five kids who were all but one of them. Four of them were introduced in... at that time, Marvel was publishing original graphic novels, and four of them, Cannonball, Sunspot, Wolfsbane, and Psyche. Daniel Moonstar were all introduced in the Marvel graphic novel number 4.
According to the wiki, her name was changed to Mirage after that.
Oh, okay. Well, in...
This
Marvel
first
Graphic Novels number 4, 1982.
Yeah.
The only one who pre-existed or predated this was Karma, Sean Coyne-Mann. She was actually created by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller.
Really?
Marvel Team Up number 100.
Yeah, I never read this either.
Yeah, she was introduced at that point as a mutant. There weren't a lot of mutants floating around the Marvel Universe at this point. She was unique at that point. But they needed to do something with her. They didn't just lose her in the shuffle. So they brought her into this team. And thus we had our five members of the team as portrayed on the cover of the 60 Cents first issue of New Mutants number 1. With that cool cover of them... The five of them drawn by Bob McCloud,
I think. Yep. I really don't know.
McCloud.
It's an okay cover. I mean, it's dramatic. You got the floating Xavier head above the five kids with their powers or at least three other powers in full bloom, with Wolfsbane as the wolf and Sunspot all sunspotted out and Cannonball blasting off, and the two other chicks running along, doing running poses. Mm-hmm. They blurred out Karma. So we can jump into this issue.
All right.
Sure.
All right. So this is Stan Lee Presents The New Mutants, written by Chris Claremont, co-creator Bob McLeod on the pencils, Mike Gustavich is the inker, Tom Orsakowski is lettering, Glennis Wynn is coloring, and Luis Jones, soon to be Luis Simonson, is the editor, and Jim Shooter, who shares a birthday with me, as editor-in-chief.
Really?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, well, everyone's got to be born someday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we get them introduced on the front in a splash panel with Sean Koyman is getting her hair washed by Stevie Hunter, a character who I never understood, by the way.
There's got to be some history there Claremont's got to have. I don't know why they introduced a dancer to the X-Men. Not even a mutant dancer, like just a plain old regular dancer.
Yeah.
And she's not even just a dancer. She's like a dancer who's got a lame leg.
Does she? I don't ever heard of the character, to tell you the truth.
She hangs around the title for a while.
Yeah. Interesting.
She hangs around the title for a while, and somehow I would have to research it. And I don't feel like it, but she was a teacher for a while at Xavier's school.
Teacher of dance.
Yes. Yes, interpretive dance, not just real dance.
Oh, well, of course. I was actually going to say that.
She taught Ellen everything she knows.
All right.
So the other four new mutants are watching Sean get her hair washed, and Stevie explains to Sean that I'm going to drown you now. God, that's quite a way to wash your hair, is to shove her face in the water like that.
Yeah, that's a little much. They don't have showers there, I guess.
And that
would have been a whole different book if they were in the shower.
Yeah.
That would have involved a whole different rating.
This is true.
Now we know why she goes lesbian later in the history of the X-Men.
Oh, hello.
It all starts here.
Nothing wrong with lesbians.
No, we support them.
Yes, I'm quite fond of them, actually.
All right, so
sorry.
Lorraine is saying that her hair will never grow, and Roberto DaCosta, whatever, showing his suave self, is telling her that do not be so sad, Rain. It suits you perfectly. Its color is fiery as your spirit. He's talking about her red hair, and she's all ach, because Chris Claremont loves to write Scottish accents. Ah, it's very Scottish, just like eh is very Canadian, apparently. And,
totally eh.
We have thought balloons. Rain is being very.
Oh, quiet. Yeah, I forgot how much I missed those.
Thought balloons, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be all nostalgic now for the rest of the episode.
Oh, this is a very nostalgic book. I mean, there's stuff happens in this book that still has repercussions today, and that's no lie.
You know, I just might have to read some of this more. I think they've got trades of it out now.
Oh, they do. Absolutely.
New Mutants, I think, was one I saw.
Uh-huh. And anyway. Stevie's thinking to herself, Roberto's a real charmer, and she's thinking to herself, she hopes that he understands that she's innocent and vulnerable. This actually is pretty good. It's a lot of exposition, but it's giving you the characterization of all the characters here. And Danny, Moonstar, Karma, Psyche, whatever, is vamping a little bit. And, oh, Roberto, if only you would look at me so. My heart, she goes pitter-pat. I faint. I swoon. Stevie, please, please, perform your wizardry on me. I, too, am an ugly duckling, yearning to be a swan. And then all of a sudden her powers activate, and she pulls out Sean's worst nightmare, which is watching her parents get murdered and then watching herself get raped by what appear to be monkeys. That are
I think they're pirates. Pirate monkeys.
They are pirate monkeys. I never understood why they were monkeys, though.
Interesting.
And our Cure twin siblings are there, who go in and out of storylines over the years. And Sean freaks out, and she attacks Danny Moonstar and calls her a monster and tries to strangle her and uses her power on Stevie to get her to back off and tells Danny she's going to use her power to cause Danny to rip her own heart out. Slaps her across the face. Spack!
Maybe that's just how she saw, interpreted those pirates.
Right.
In her brain. Is monsters. Yes. Anyway, go ahead.
No, it's okay. So Roberto slaps her, releasing Stevie from Sean's power, which her power is to possess people. And Danny Moonstar's power at that point was to show 3D, to bring out 3D images of people's worst fears and worst memories. That was their both psychic powers. So not very visible, not very visual and not very physical. And she's railing on Danny Moonstar, and Danny runs out of the room, and Roberto says he's going to go find her, and we get a little background into Sam Guthrie, Cannonball, who's saying, no, you got to leave her be. I've got a passel of sisters back home in Kentucky. We've had our share of scraps. I learned the hard way how to handle them in an 8x5 crowd. He likes doing accents, doesn't he? So, now,
do we meet Sam's sister at any point? I feel like we do.
Later on.
Yeah, like years later. One of his sisters.
She's called Husk, wasn't she?
Yes. She's still in the X-Men, actually. There we go. She's a teacher at the Jean Grey School.
Okie dokie.
Oh, that's right. She is, isn't she?
She went nuts for a while.
Yeah, it seems like I remember that.
And I think two others of his siblings turned out to be mutants. One of them had wings, and he ended up dying in one of the new X-Men books or something like that. And there was another sibling that had powers, but I don't remember that one very well. But the Guthries are kind of like the Rasputins. They just keep churning out mutant siblings. Or,
the Wikipedia entry has a list of all the collected editions for this series.
There's quite a few.
I
didn't realize there was that many.
Well, this series lasted 100 issues, and there was a few. And there's now and then of course went into X-Force with Liefeld and company. And we jump ahead a little bit in time, and Daniel Moonstar is. Daniel is walking around the mansion, the X-Mansion, and she wanders into Kitty Pryde's room and seeing pictures of how happy they are. And they actually, it's a little interesting that she's in there and she doesn't know who they are. Xavier has not told them about who the X-Men are, other than they exist. And then she goes back out in the hall and she notices that there's an attic and she climbs up there when it's Storm's attic. Where she keeps all these plants and weapons, apparently.
Oh, okie dokie. That's Storm's place. Gotcha.
Yes. Gosh, I thought you guys might have known more of the X-Men stuff. Apparently, I am the only one here who is an ex-geek back
then. I'm sorry. I was reading the Wikipedia thing. What did you say?
Oh, just that's Storm's attic.
I don't think I really dove. I was never heavy into the X-Men, and when I was, it was...
I think it might have been after this.
I want to say after this, too. I want to say I started around issue 175, maybe.
Yeah, I don't really remember.
Just when Paul Smith was leaving.
Ah.
And John
this is right about you're, this is right about now. That's only maybe another 6 months in to this run.
And even then, I wasn't real. I never really stuck with it, so I don't know all their ins and outs and stuff. But when I was reading the X-Men, it was still a relatively small cast compared to the 8 billion mutants that there are right now.
Yeah. No, actually, Paul Smith is the one who drew that issue that had the first meeting between the X-Men and the New Mutants.
Oh, yeah.
Where, remember where Xavier turned out to be possessed by a brood queen?
Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Okay, well. Which, then, you know what, that might have actually been the beginning of Paul Smith's run, not the end. So, never mind. Anyway. Tangent over. So Xavier calls all the students to the Danger Room, which they have not been introduced to yet. We get the obligatory explanation of what the Danger Room is. But before that, we get a sidebar into London where we see Moira McTaggart and Ileana Rasputin, who you were just asking. No, you were asking about Husk. Never mind.
Yeah.
Ileana Rasputin are meeting with Gabriel Howler, who at the time was the Israeli ambassador.
And also a heavy smoker.
Yeah, apparently so.
Smoking, and she reveals to Moira that her son is a autistic mutant, and is Xavier's boy.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Huh, I didn't realize he was introduced that early in.
Yeah.
I didn't remember his age at all. I did not.
Hmm.
So
interesting.
She's telling Moira, you take the kid because I can't send him to Charles, and okay, I'll take him. And we, of course, are introduced more to him later when it turns out he's Legion. And then we actually get his own series for about 18 months or 18 issues recently.
Did they cancel that?
Yeah, it's becoming this for some stupid character named Nightcrawler. I've never heard of him.
Oh, okay. I'll probably buy that.
Yeah, I would imagine.
He's always one of my favorites.
The recently resurrected, not resurrected, Nightcrawler. Okay, so we get the obligatory explanation of what Danger Room is, and everyone's looking forward to it, and Roberto's saying, "Hey, this is nothing better than what my dad has back at his gym at our rich house down in Brazil." And Xavier's like, "Yeah, right." And he's telling him, "You know, I'm going to train you, but you're not going to be X-Men. You're just going to be well trained, but I'm going to teach you how to battle, but you don't get to be X-Men."
He was very adamant. I saw that line. He says, there will never be the X-Men. Nobody will ever be the X-Men again. Interesting.
But then he trains him. He's going to train him in combat. So I always thought that was, as I was rereading this, after a year, I can't remember the last time I read this, by the way. Mm-hmm. So then he tells Roberto, "You're an idiot," and he turns the room into a jungle with mud and beasts. And Stevie's all far out, man.
They were still using that back then?
Apparently they were. And for whatever reason, again, a dancer. So it's the only ones who have control over the room are Xavier, Dr. McTaggart, Moira McTaggart, and
Hunter. Was she friends with one of the other X-Men? Is that why she's in the inner circle?
I don't know.
What's her name? I gotta look it up.
Stevie Hunter.
You continue while I do that.
You know what? I think she was Kitty's dance teacher. And
she was introduced in X-Men 139, 1980. Stevie Hunter was a professional dancer, but an injury to her knee ruined her career and forced her to discontinue her dancing full time. Then she began. She opened a dance studio in Salem Center with Kitty Pryde as a student. And she became a bestie with Kitty and Storm. And then she was teaching physical education classes at the Xavier School.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And then, of course, she was on Genosha when it got blowed up real good.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
That was the end of her.
Yeah, that tends to do that.
Things get blowed up around you. Yeah, that's about it. Yep. And then she fights the Shadow King along with Xavier. Ever again. Yeah. The real world perspective. So, we get the various New Mutants going into the Danger Room. And, well, first we get Xavier saying, you know, some are illusions, three-dimensional holographic projections, but other things in here are painfully real. You cannot afford to take anything for granted.
Now, keep in mind, this was, 82, 83?
83.
Right? And then it was 6 or 7 years later that the holodeck showed up on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Wow. Copying.
I think so.
Well, the X-Men, they had the Danger Room holographic stuff even before this. I mean,
yeah, that's true. I can't remember if it was this sophisticated or not.
It's however sophisticated the artist wants to draw it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
It's a comic book.
All right, New Mutants Classic number one on my Amazon wish list.
There you go. So Cannonball dives in first, being the oldest. And he blasts off, slams into a wall, because at this point he couldn't turn very well. And then,
turning is kind of important.
Yeah, well, that was always as you read through the series, you'll find that that's like his big, that's his kryptonite, is turning. Because he's like, he goes straight, just crashes through things.
It's a cannonball. He's just shot in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have a cat trying to escape this room. Hold on.
Is the cat going in one direction?
Go. Leave me alone. Okay, so then he gets sucked up a vacuum cleaner. It's a vacuum tube. And he goes crashing back down the ground. Look at that. One page to tell all this. You know how long, this would be a whole issue nowadays.
Yeah, that probably would be.
So, next we get Wolfsbane. Cool power. I always like to shoot that. It could be a wolf, a human, or a hybrid.
Yeah, I agree. That's good stuff.
And she fails pretty quickly. She falls down a hole, gets flipped up, and falls on her butt. That's not quite a failure. Her failure was not keeping trying at it. So, and I'll be honest with you. She's the only character in here that I think Bob McCloud draws really well.
He seems to have an affinity for her. Like, I wouldn't say I'm one of Bob McCloud's greatest fans, but he does a good Rain.
Yeah. His Sam Guthrie's not bad either, because he draws the lankiness. But and then Roberto is cocky. He walks in there. He gets grabbed by a robot, turns on his solar badassery, and then gets his fist stuck inside the robot, just like a Brer Rabbit.
Yeah, it's like a mushroom robot.
Marshmallow
robot.
Okay.
Stay puff.
I'm getting old. I'm mixing up my words.
My wife keeps calling her sister, who's out here by our daughter's name. It happened.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
And everybody's up laughing in the control room except for Danny, who's, for some reason, she's scared out of her mind. She's scared to death to be in there, to go into that danger room.
Scary thing, man.
And we also learn more of Sunspot's limitations, which is he can only store, at that point, he can only store up so much solar energy, and then he'd revert back to being normal boy. And then Karma goes in there, and it turns into a cityscape, a ruined cityscape. And Xavier's plan is to have the other New Mutants attack her, and she possesses Cannonball, who, strangely, when he's possessed, he can turn. She's better at his powers.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And she crashes Cannonball into Sunspot, which is kind of dog because he's just a... That would hurt, I would think. But she gets taken down by a doggy. He licks her face. Licky, licky. That's how she gets taken down, is licked to death. And then it's Psyche slash whatever. Karma's. What'd you say your name becomes? Mirage's turn.
Yeah, yeah.
She walks down to the danger room. Tentatively. She's sweating like a pig.
This scene seemed to come out of nowhere. Her whole I'm terrified scene, it seemed really overplayed.
Well, doesn't it have to do with, like, the demon bear? I remember seeing pictures of that crap.
You will. Yeah, the demon bear is a huge deal. When Sienkiewicz joins the book in a year and a half.
She has a panic attack.
She does. Jitters. Test jitters. But you're right, it is a little melodramatic, given how tough she comes across. I think that she's feeling bad because she doesn't feel like she can control her powers after what she did to her buddy earlier by making her relive her rapery. And she goes tearing out of the school. We get a flash forward in time. She's sitting in the middle of the grounds of the X-Mansion, and we are reintroduced to the fact that when Rain is a wolf, they share a psychic bond, and that part of Danielle Moonstar's powers is she can bond with animals.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That explained that puma thing earlier.
In the graphic novel, yes. Yeah, the graphic novel is actually really good. I looked through it.
It looks interesting. I was just reading on here that that was supposed to be the first issue of the series, but Shooter made him rework it into the graphic novel so that the Marvel graphic novel series would be on time.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And apparently, despite his wheeling and dealing, it was still 2 weeks late due to Bob McLeod's honeymoon.
I remember picking up that OGN on a crappy bookstore the same weekend, the first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con.
Maybe I'll have an opportunity to pick one up myself.
You go, boy.
You're all right, go ahead. Sorry.
Back when the original graphic novels had meaning.
Yeah.
But they did. I mean, we got the New Mutants graphic novel. We got the Death of Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that's true. Man loves, Dazzler. God kills, or wait.
Yeah, but God loves, man kills.
That's it. Yeah. I think I have that somewhere.
Anyhow, so they have a little discussion, and Rain is telling her that, you know, everyone wants her there. She's not hated. You know, come on back. It's all good. Ah, it's all good. There we go. I not had any to speak of. She's talking about friends, but wow. Is that how Scottish people talk, Murray, up in Canada? I don't know.
Totally.
Up in Canada.
Well, there's a lot of Scottish people who ended up in Canada. So.
Really?
Yeah, Nova Scotia. That's like New Scotland.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. They eat seals.
What?
In Nova Scotia, they eat seal.
Only if they have to. Okay. If they're out of fish sticks. And they go clubbing the baby seals.
I got that one. I went to Fashion Top of Canada. The guy was eating seal on there.
Oh, man.
But he was also talking about fish sticks.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
So we get a little background into Danielle Moonstar, how she freaked her parents out by showing them their deaths, and how, you know, being killed by a bear, symbolically, the bear was killing an eagle and killing a horse. The demon bear, who we get introduced to much later on down the road.
I remember the covers from that.
Mm-hmm.
When Bill Sienkiewicz.
Sienkiewicz,
is that how you say that?
Yeah, that's how you say it.
I remember those covers when he was on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, we get a little vagueness to her power, which is that I guess at one point it was just to show people their greatest fears, but I guess she could also show them their future deaths, which which actually tied in pretty well to when she became a Valkyrie.
I was just thinking about that.
Because I didn't remember that aspect of her powers. I remember her powers just being showing people their fears, but apparently she could show them their deaths as well. And she showed them their deaths, showed her mom and dad's deaths. They went off on a hunting trip and both got killed by a bear. We get a callback to the graphic novel of her showing her grandfather how he died, getting beat up by big armored guys who then did show up and beat him up to death.
I think those were mandroids, weren't they?
Mandroids, very good, thank you.
Sure.
Nice pull there.
Yeah, well, I remember those from... I had all the Marvel Universe handbooks, so...
I memorized them.
Some of them, yes. It's part of my my curse, my blessing and curse of eidemic memory.
You're just like Batgirl.
Okay. I bet I don't look near as good in tights as she does, though.
Speaking of which, get these Superman Batman. Anyway, it's really good. Anyhow.
Okay.
Anyhow, so Rain keeps trying to convince her that no one hates her, and thus the rest of the school kids pull up. They're going to go on a ride. Somehow they're all cramming into this little convertible. Danielle is like, no, I ain't going. And down runs Rain. She jumps into the car as a wolf and lands on Roberto's lap. He says, then again, full-grown... her being full grown might have other compensations. So I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. And she rips his head off. No. And she tells everyone that Daniel's not with them. And they go driving off, which I thought was a convertible, but I guess it's not a convertible. It's just a badly drawn.
It's a 4-door sedan.
Yeah, that's just the way it was drawn. I mean, it looked like that.
It's not a well-drawn.
It's a Saab, actually. You can see it on the horn on the wheel.
It looks like in this panel at the top of this page, it looks like something out of an Archie comic.
Yeah.
It really does. So they're going to drive into town and go hang out, and they're being spied upon by shady-looking guys. One of them has a really big Hector Hammond-looking head.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? The largest forehead known to man.
It really is a big forehead, and he's smoking a cigarette, and they've got their sunglasses on, their shades, and they're talking to one of my favorite supporting characters of all time, Henry Peter Gyrich.
Yeah, I remember him when I was reading X-Men. What a bastard.
He was great in the Avengers. He was all over. He was what I think a Coulson. Coulson was supposed to initially be, but Coulson turned out to be a nice guy, whereas Gyrich was just not a nice guy.
Yes, yes.
So he's telling them, hey, just keep an eye on them. Don't reveal yourselves. And he answers only to the president. He's pondering his next move. And turn the page. There we go. And then we're back at the X-Mansion. And Daniel Moonstar is by herself going back into the danger room. She's shaking like a leaf, but she still is programming the danger room for her test, whatever it's supposed to be, because she wants her family to honor and courage back. And then we get a letters page thrown in here in the middle of
I thought I'd hit the wrong thing.
We'll come back to that in a moment. I want to revisit that and just up here. And then she goes down into the danger room. She goes in, and she's being attacked by robots. And she realizes, oh my god, my power only works on human beings. So she has to fight these robots. And she does some flips. And somehow, by living with animals, she knows how to do judo and karate and stuff.
Yeah, it's animal karate.
It's animal karate. Those raccoons, they're badasses.
They're nimble. They got great fingers.
I think I read somewhere where someone stabbed their husband with a squirrel, so she's fighting.
Nice!
And she sees the exit, and she's diving for it, and she goes through, and she made it, and she passed it just
the head.
She gets zappeted in the head.
Good.
And dragged back into the room. And I assume dragged back into the room, because on the one panel she's out of the room, but in this panel she's back in the room. So, and someone's unlocking the safety interlocks on the danger room. Some shadowy figure. And this Daniel Moonstar wakes up, and a three-horned creature is crawling towards her through the muck.
Getting ready to snack on her.
It's hungry, Danny realizes, and she is dinner. And worst of all, this is neither test nor illusion, but deadly reality.
I think it's an illusion.
It looks illusion-y. And the next issue we get Sentinels.
Woohoo!
Interesting.
So that was the first issue of what would be... All these characters lasted. I mean,
they
introduced characters all over the place, and they are here today, gone tomorrow. But these guys, 30 years later, are still around.
Okay, so where Danny Moonstar was recently in the Fearless Defenders book.
Right.
Yeah, yep. She doesn't have her powers anymore.
She is powerless. She lost her powers in M-Day.
Oh, and they're still giving her stuff to do. That's nice of them.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
She was in that New Mutants redo that they tried to do there for a while, too. I read a couple of those issues.
By former Legion writers.
Was it?
Yeah, DNA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right.
And Sunspot and Cannonball are acting like frat boys in the Avengers.
Yep. Yeah, I don't like how they portray them in that. It's kind of... They make them look like idiots.
Yeah. And Rain, where is she right now? What is she up to?
She got knocked up over in Peter David's X-Force. Or not...
She was over there for a long, long time.
X-Factor, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, she was on X-Force, too.
But in X-Factor, she got knocked up and had a kid with a demigod.
Like you do.
Yes, like you do. But she's between gigs right now. We don't know where... I don't know where she's hanging her hat nowadays.
Interesting.
And then what happened to Karma? Because I feel like she left the team early on in its run. Because I don't think she was around during the Sienkiewicz issues.
In the entry here, when it mentions Mirage, Daniel Moonstar, originally codenamed Psyche, a Cheyenne... An eventual co-leader after Karma's quote-unquote death.
Yes, in issue five of this series, they drop her from the book in an exploding house. It appears that she's dead, but...
I'm looking at her entry.
But eventually she comes back, I guess?
She gets rescued. She was possessed by the Black King.
That Farrakh guy with the fez.
Yes.
I remember
and
that.
She actually regains her shapely figure in the Arthur Adams New Mutants special #1.
Yeah, when she was that one where they were on Asgard. I loved those two books.
Yep.
I think I still have those. One of the few Marvel books I to give away or sell in the Great Marvel Purge.
They were recollected. They were as a four-parter when it was those two issues. It was an X-Men annual number, I want to think 10, New Mutants special #1, and the X-Men Alpha Flight.
Miniseries. Yeah, that's right.
Have the X-Men
beautiful art, Adams art in that.
And then Paul Smith, I think. Was it Paul Smith who did the X-Men Alpha Flight?
Yes. Smith. As a matter of fact, I think they just... I saw that somewhere. The Asgardian Wars.
That's it. Yeah, Asgardian Wars. That's it. Yeah.
That's what they call a trade.
But but what happened to Karma? She lost her leg. I don't remember exactly the circumstances. So she has a mechanical leg, and she went lesbian in a Kitty Pryde miniseries.
How lovely.
Not with Kitty Pryde, but she was a supporting character in it. And then she went bad for a little while. She was possessed, and that she was the secret bad guy at North Star's wedding.
Oh, you're kidding me!
Really?
Huh.
They had the lesbian be the bad guy at the gay guy's wedding.
Oh, well, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. And I don't know what she's up to this week. I'm sure she's probably sitting drinking coffee somewhere.
Yeah, according to, okay, it says Astonishing X-Men says something about her becoming a billionaire.
Karma?
Yeah. Nice. After Hitachi's death, Karma inherits her company as the only eligible relative of age and effectively becomes a billionaire. Interesting. It doesn't mention anything about that wedding, though.
Okay. Well, she was possessed by something, which is her thing. She keeps getting possessed and doing
that.
Yeah,
she can possess people, but apparently she's very susceptible to it herself.
So that's what the New Mutants are up to nowadays. And Stevie Hunter fell off the face of the planet.
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
We got a few more mutants that joined over time. Cable was introduced in New Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
Boom Boom joined for a while. She was introduced in Secret Wars 2.
Yeah, I remember that.
We had Rusty, Cypher, Domino, Feral, Gossamer. I don't know who that is. Magic was a member for a while. Who's yep. now in
Warlock. In, don't forget him.
Yeah, Warlock. Who
Warlock is, and the
Cypher.
Yeah, the normal dude.
And Warpath.
Warpath and Cypher and Warlock are going to be in the reboot of Peter David's X Factor.
Oh, really? Cool.
That's
already. I think that's out already.
It is, but they haven't appeared yet.
Okay.
And then a few other members. They actually had a fairly small cast compared to most of the X-Books, but some of these characters had very long history, like Cable. Cable appeared here first, and
yeah, they were the. This was the precursor to X-Force. I remember when that happened. I actually started reading X-Force when it came out.
Yep. And then, Liefeld jumped on New Mutants near the end of its run, and then it rebooted as X-Force number one with him and Louise Simonson.
Yep.
And that started all the arguing over who created what.
Yeah, no kidding.
So at the same time as this issue was out, we had Avengers, looks like 229, which is the final curtain falls here for the final fate of Henry Pym.
I saw there was a Dread Star issue in there, too.
Yeah. We had New Mutants number one, of course, and then Spider-Man meets Submariner. See if there's anything else that jumps out here from this list of... we had Dread Star, like you said, Hulk versus Quasimodo.
In fact, that was issue number two of Dread Star.
And we had a... we had an issue of Epic was out with Barry Windsor-Smith doing art in it.
Nice.
And Star Slammers.
With the official handbook of the Marvel Universe number 3.
Yeah, I was buying all those.
C and E.
I used to have every single one. Wow.
They collected all those. They
yeah, I know. I've been meaning to get them.
Micronauts was still out at the time. Dazzler. Spider-Woman. Team America.
Oh, wow.
Hi.
G.I. Joe was early in its run, only number 9 of G.I. Joe at the time.
167 of X-Men.
They were off in space. They were fighting the Brood and... That's why... Oh, Jesus.
Oh.
Sorry about that. That's why the New Mutants was happening, because they were off planet. Everybody thought they were dead.
Okay. Yeah, I started reading after that.
So, Star Slammers was out, which... Speaking of Simonson, that was Walt Simonson drawn. Yeah. Anyway, I love the New Mutants. I had, at one point, I probably had all 100 issues, plus the specials and annuals and so on and so forth. And I initially was a Liefeld apologist. I learned to not be after some time.
I actually, the first comic convention I went to back in, was it, 96, was when... I forget what was going on at the time, but I actually got his autograph. Or no, I didn't get his autograph. I waited for my friend to get his autograph for an hour and a half. And while I was sitting there, Walter Koenig walked by.
Nice.
Yeah, it was
you
interesting.
Tripped him.
No, I didn't trip him. He was. I still liked him back then. I didn't realize how he was kind of arrogant. I've read several interviews of him, and yeah.
Well,
so, yeah, and you're right. Brett Blevins did some art on it, which was not the highlight of the series.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't remember when he came in, though. Like, was he right after Sienkiewicz, or...?
Well, according to this, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, it doesn't, I'm not, they're not showing who drew what here, but...
Quite a switch.
yeah, that's... yeah. Well, kind of, he de-aged them. I mean, these characters went from looking like, right now they look age appropriate in this issue. They actually look the ages I think that they're supposed to be. Somewhere between 13 and 16 and maybe 17. Then they age a lot in later issues and then de-age. Like you said, during the Blevins run, they became infants again.
I just saw towards the bottom, apparently in the live-action X-Men Days of Future Past movie that's coming out soon, will feature several of the New Mutants characters in supporting roles.
Hmm.
I know Sunspot. I've seen pictures of the Sunspot character.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I have too.
Let's see. You got Magneto, Mystique, Storm, Rogue, which I'm surprised that she's back. Halle Berry, Ellen Page, Kitty Pryde, Peter Dinklage is Bolivar Trask, Nicholas Holt as Beast. You got Iceman's back. Omar Sy is Bishop. That should be fun. We got Colossus, Warpath, Fan Bing Bing as Blink. Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, Sunspot. Yeah, Aiden Canto. You got William Stryker's back.
Stryker.
Yeah, exactly. Toad. Havoc. Oh, that's it.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Looks good.
So, New Mutants number one. Did you guys, are you guys intrigued enough that you would ever read future issues?
Yeah, I think
I would totally look for it in back issue bins and stuff.
Yeah, that's probably going to be one of the ones on my list that I take with me to Planet Comic Con.
Yeah, I remember enjoying the little bits of it that I picked up as the mood hit me when I was younger. So it would totally be a good back issue find.
Yeah, I would think so.
This was like right when I was getting into X-Men. At that point, I was really only reading DC. You know, I think Secret Wars was going on at the time, and I was picking up Legion and DC Comics Presents and, I don't know, a couple other DC books, maybe Justice League. You know, I'm sure Justice League was on the list at the time, but it was around the same time as the Great Darkness Saga and a couple others that were going on, and My local comic book dealer said, "You gotta try X-Men." I'm like, "Marvel, really? Whatever." So I picked it up, and it was right at this time, and I got hooked. I was dragged in.
I got hooked. I was already reading Legion at the time, pretty regularly, but I got started on it with X-Men and the New Teen Titans at the same time.
Ooh.
With the crossover book that they did with Darkseid or Darkseid and all that. I never seen that. Yeah, that was what made me do it, because the Great Darkness Saga had already happened and I saw Darkseid on the cover and I knew a little bit about some of those characters, so I got that, learned enough about both of them, and then I started reading New Teen Titans and Uncanny X-Men at the same time.
Oh, awesome intro, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, trying to figure out which issue 167 was.
Again, speaking of Walter Simonson.
Yeah, that's right. They were in space.
Yep.
With the Brood.
There's a great cover. The cover that drew me in, there's a where Wolverine is transforming into a Brood on the
yes,
cover.
Yes, I remember that.
And that was my first issue of X-Men. And I had no idea who most of these characters were.
Let's see.
And as much as people bag on Claremont for his exposition, he really wrote it so anybody could pick up any issue and know who everybody was and what was going on.
Totally. Yep.
That's how comic books should be written.
I agree.
Yes. Yes. We can discuss that when we go through some of the new Marvel Now stuff.
You
mean like Moon Knight number one?
That's the one. So it was 10 issues after that. 10 months after that. My first Uncanny X-Men issue was number 177. I just looked it up.
Okay.
All right, let's wrap this up. We got people on the timetable here.
Sorry, my fault again. Apologies,
hey, no problem, man. We got her done.
No worries.
Right. And let's see. As always, you can send us an email at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com and let us know what you think. We can join us on the Facebook page. You just added a couple people the other day out of the blue. Hopefully they're listeners. And also, you can comment on the actual issues themselves and let us know what you think there.
Cool.
All right. That's about it for this week, people.
Happy, happy, joy, joy. Have fun at the con, Chris.
Yay! I'm going to, one way or the other. If I have to get drunk and, you know, whatever. Anyway, that's about it. We're out.
Alrighty. Catch you later.
All right. Later, man.